You're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with your host, Giovanni Puccini.
Hi, this is Ian Barker from United Soccer Coaches, and you're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with host, Giovanni Puccini.
Welcome to the GP Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Giovanni Puccini. My goodness, we've been on a roll lately in terms of the number of outstanding guests, not just the number, but the resumes, the experiences, the profile of the guests that I've been able to have here in the GP Soccer Podcast has been great. And listen, I am very grateful, very, very grateful for the folks who come on the show. But, you know, the last episode we had Brett Johnson going to be doing some great things down in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. With Tidewater Landing and bringing a soccer-specific stadium and a USL franchise to that area. Frank DeLapa of the Boston Globe, wonderful conversation about the history of soccer in the Boston area. Ian Barker, who helped open the show today from United Soccer Coaches. Marcus DiBernardo, John Barada, the great coach over at Oliver Ames High School in Easton. My buddy Chris Trianos, medical director of the Boston Marathon. We opened Season 3 with Eric Eisenhut. Just a bevy of wonderful, wonderful guests, and thanks to all of those folks. Now, listen, today's no different. We have a returning guest, my good friend, my very good friend, Darish Hazadi, is coming back on to the GP Soccer Podcast to talk about his latest endeavor, My Soccer Advocate. I would guess there's a lot of funny stories or interesting stories that coincide with people and how they met, I don't know, their friend, their best friend, their wife, their girlfriend, their husband, whatever. There's a bit of an interesting story, shall we call it, but in the way Darius and I met a number of years ago, and number with a capital N, we go back a few years, the phone rings and my wife picks up the phone and she walks in and she goes, some guy on the phone named Darius who wants to talk to you. Now, I had no idea who this person Darius was. So I go, hello, and it starts with the hey, you don't know me, but, and it started from there. And Darius was calling because I had just recently written an article for Soccer New England about the state of the game here in the United States and my own opinions as to where we're at, where we were at the time and where we should be. And he had to call and had to kind of chime in. And it was one of those phone calls that just went on and on and on and said, you know what? We should probably meet. Let's get together, man, and talk about this kind of stuff. And Darius was working at the time for the New England Revolution, and we met down in Foxborough at a Papageno's, if my memory serves me correct. Darius can help me out on that one. And boy, oh boy, we met. It was a chilly night, I remember vividly. And we went on and on, and we chatted, and we were like, you know, long lost soccer friends. And I remember, you know, leaving the Papageno's, and it was snowing like crazy, and it seems like we had been there forever. But that was the beginning of what has since transpired into a wonderful relationship. Darius is one of my good friends, and I'm such a fan. I'm such a fan of the work that he is doing with Project Goal and his latest endeavor. I had a chance to interview Darius. The interview you're going to hear on the other side of the commercial took place on September the 10th, 2020. A couple of things have transpired since then, one of which is the private-public partnership that will lead or is leading to the creation of mini pitches in Central Falls. Having the press release in front of me, which was released on September the 18th, there is going to be the building, if you will, of small futsal-style soccer fields that can help to provide a secure place for youth to play soccer and create more opportunities for Central Falls youths to continue being involved and being successful in the sport of soccer. It goes on to say in the press release, the mini pitch will be located on Ledge Street in Central Falls, just blocks away from the Project Goal headquarters and the Central Falls City Hall. I know this is something that Darius has been talking about for quite some time, about having an actual infrastructure, an actual place where kids can go play. Certainly, if you go on the Project Goal website, you can get the most recent, most up-to-date information on that. I want to dedicate the entire show to Project Goal. I want to dedicate the entire show to Darius's efforts to talk about the wonderful things he's doing in that area. And on the other side of that interview, I'm going to kind of dovetail part of the conversation about college selections, some of the things that that kids should think about, parents should think about when they're considering pursuing a college or you know, making a decision relative to college. And we'll do that on the other side of the interview with Derek Shahzadi. So this is Giovanni Pacini. I am your host of the GP Soccer Podcast. We're going to take a brief commercial message. On the other side, we'll get into the interview that I had with Darius Shahzadi. Don't you go anywhere. What if I were to tell you that there is an opportunity to experience cutting-edge soccer coaching education for incredible prices? A program where you can choose a youth diploma, senior diploma, or cognitive soccer diploma. How about taking courses that are designed to deliver impactful information that will change the way you teach the game? Well, that can all be found at the DiBernardo Soccer School. Coach Marcus DiBernardo is a worldwide leader in cognitive soccer coaching, and his work has been featured in Europe, South America, and in the United States. Most recently, he was the only American invited to present at the Conference for Soccer and Neuroscience. The DiBernardo Soccer School proudly announces the first ever Virtual Director of Coaching program. This one-of-a-kind program partners with your club, is 100% customizable, and features such options as Coach DiBernardo training your coaches virtually, providing your club with comprehensive coaching methodologies for every age group, ideas for business development, providing marketing materials for your club website, and so much more. For further information, visit CoachDiBernardo.com or contact Marcus DiBernardo at CoachDiBernardo@gmail.com. Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast with me, your host, Giovanni Pacini. I'm so glad that you're with me today. I'm actually very glad you're with me each and every episode. And there's lots of you out there who are listening, which is just fantastic. As you very well know by now, I've been so lucky to have a wonderful group of people contributing to the show from season one all the way up now to season three. And the beat goes on today. You know, I shared with you a little story, a little setup about today's guest and how we met. It's always a great story. I always love telling the story about how Darius and I met. But now you get to hear him live, and we'll spend some time talking about his involvement in the game, specifically with Project Goal and his new venture called My Soccer Advocate. So with all that said, today's guest is Darius Shahzadi. Darius is the co-founder of Project Goal, which stands for Greater Opportunity for Athletes to Learn. He is a New England Soccer Hall of Fame inductee. And according to the New England Soccer Journal, Darius is one of the top 50 most influential people in New England soccer. He's a former Rhode Island Stingrays general manager and assistant coach, former New England Revolution director of Hispanic and Cape Verdean Community Marketing and Development, and he's the founding member of the Urban Soccer Collaborative, among other things. And now we can add to that biography slash resume his newest venture, My Soccer Advocate. And let me add on a personal note, such a good friend, such a dear friend. I consider myself very, very lucky to have Darius Shahzadi in my life, not just as a soccer colleague and a friend, but just having him as a friend in life. So Darius, welcome back. You're a returning guest to the GP Soccer Podcast. Welcome.
I am honored as usual.
Well, let's get through this first. We'll see how that goes. Before you say you're honored.
Okay.
You know, let's wait for the final product here. But I appreciate your optimism. So.
Hey, it's always good to be a returning guest. That means I'm somewhat liked.
Yes. Well, listen, you're liked by the most important person of all, and that would be me. You know, if I don't like you, I'm not bringing anybody back. But yeah, you're a returning guest. And I would say to people, go back to season one and listen to that first interview with Darius Shahzadi. He was one of my first guests in season one when I was first starting this venture. And here we are today. So as I mentioned, Darius, you know, I really want to kind of spend some time with your work with Project Goal and then spend a good deal of time talking about My Soccer Advocate. Share with my audience, what is Project Goal? Where did this all start? What was the genesis? You know, and where are you now with the program?
So we started Project Goal in 2004. This was shortly after I left the New England Revolution, after many years of working in the USL with the Rhode Island Stingrays, working with the Cape Verdean and Latino communities with the Revolution. You know, being from the Providence area, which is where I call my home, living in Rhode Island the last 25 years now, you know, did a lot of camps, did a lot of coaching, saw a lot of need in the inner city portions of Providence, Central Falls, and Pawtucket, which are kind of all bordering towns, cities, with a very wide variety of kids and backgrounds and a huge love of soccer. A lot of those kids in those areas, in terms of schooling in high school, there was a very large dropout rate. But something that they all had in common culturally and within those areas was the love of soccer. So myself and two of our co-founders, Javier Centeno and Peter Wilton, who I had known through the Stingrays and through the Revolution, tried to figure out a way that we could help these kids by helping them to focus on school, you know, understanding the importance of school, but then also kind of using soccer as the incentive. So we kind of identified two areas where kids would not participate in programming after school, regardless of whether it was sports related or not. Number one was fees. For many of these kids coming from lower income families could not afford to be paying fees. And then the other was transportation. So we had to kind of solve those two big questions in the beginning and come up with a solution. So we decided to have the program be 100% free of charge. And then if the kids needed transportation, we would provide it by a busing. And we would just rent the same school buses that the schools use and transport kids to the location where we would run the program. Program came up in terms of the design of having an hour and a half of classroom, homework support, and having a curriculum that would be age appropriate, grade appropriate. And then for those who would be there consistently, show effort in the classroom, we would reward them with another hour and a half of soccer right afterwards, whether that was in a gymnasium or a field, depending on the time of the year, and that would be the reward. Things that came along with that were, you know, coaching sessions that you actually participated in through the NSCAA, which is now the United Soccer Coaches Association. For our older kids, we would have members of the New England Revolution come in for clinics. We would have members of the Brown and Providence College men and women's teams come work with the kids in the classroom and on the soccer field. And, you know, we saw our numbers start at 20 kids back in 2004, and it ballooned up to somewhere between 60 and 80 kids at a time, both boys and girls, you know, to present day. We've served probably 2,000 plus kids. We have kids that are now, you know, past college, have their own kids, some who actually have their first kids in our program who participated back in 2004. We've been recognized by the FIFA Foundation as being a soccer for good program. So using soccer in a positive way socially, outside of just trying to develop, you know, the next professional soccer player. Along with that, you know, we had our first alum actually sign a professional contract with the New England Revolution, Damian Rivera. He just turned 17 this year, and he's currently signed with the first team, but been playing most of his games with the Revolution 2 team that plays in the USL 1 League. We have, you know, been going strong for, you know, all that amount of time. Again, we still continue to fundraise all the money used in the program. The kids don't pay anything. And, you know, for the past year, we've had to alter the program because of the COVID crisis, but still continuing and working on some, you know, projects within the community that hopefully will materialize within the next couple of months. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at with Project Goal.
You know, Darius, and you've heard me say it before, and you and I have talked about it. I remember when I first came down, you invited me down to, you know, to conduct coaching education course through the then NSCAA, now United Soccer Coaches. And I remember arriving down in Central Falls and walking into the school and then going into the gymnasium. And I'll never forget this picture, Darius, this group of kids, and they were of the younger set, and one ball. And the amount, what struck me was the talent. The amount of talent, the kids who got the ball, their ability to control their ball, to control the ball, dribble and take on kids. And the second thing, or maybe 1A, was the level of enthusiasm for just being in a gym with a soccer ball. It was jaw dropping. It really was it was a wonderful thing to see. And then again, having been a part of it, you know, again, teaching a coaching education course for your older players, you know, their ability now to see where the game can take them, you know, where the game gives them opportunity, you know, to go on to prep school or go on to college or get a coaching education license. You know, and I'll never forget those first times I was down there and watching. It really was a treat. So you mentioned, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say, you know, I think, you know, the arrival of Project Goal in that area for a soccer-starved population, but also for just a community of students who are craving attention, right? Like they need that extra support. The soccer is kind of like, you know, the icing on the cake for them and probably the thing that gets them the most motivated about being at Project Goal, other than, you know, the attention that they get. But, you know, as a great story, you know, you're basically running those coaching education courses. We have several kids who are coaching now. You know, that we've had a few involved with a couple of the different premier clubs in the area, even town leagues. And it's all a result because they have that certificate that they got from your coaching course. So, as I've always said, I've been very appreciative of your willingness to participate with us and run those courses because, you know, I knew at down the line it would yield some great results, and it has. And those kids are very appreciative, and I think they're very proud to show that certificate.
Indeed. You know, I'm no longer a head coach, but I spent many, many, many years as a head coach, more than I can even recall. But I had one of your Project Goal graduate, Sevi Barrientos, come to play for me when I was over at LaSalle College, and was an outstanding player. And we had a, you know, albeit short-lived, we had a you know, he was a great contributor to our, you know, to our program. So, yeah, it was great to see. So you had to do some work, you had to do a lot of work, in collaborating with the school system. Share with my audience the challenges, if there were indeed any challenges, on how you took your idea and took this idea about, you know, kids playing soccer, but adding the educational aspect and then integrating the two. So how did it go with school systems? Were they accepting? Was there pushback? How did that all go?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a new frontier in many senses. I'd say that we're looked at very differently by, let's say, the two groups that we're, you know, most affiliated with, the education and school system, as you mentioned, and then also the soccer community, right? So we're a private, you know, organization run by, what would you say, concerned citizens, people who want to contribute back, who have an idea. None of us are educators, although we have teachers that we hire to do the classroom portion. Everybody is a certified teacher, but we are not a organization that comes from the school system. So we're looked at kind of differently by the school systems, a little bit kind of critical, I guess, in the beginning, not really knowing what they could expect. And then as we showed success in terms of attendance and improvement of grades, and then eventually we ended up getting many of our students into private schooling and independent schooling institutions for a better kind of, you know, school experience. I think the schools didn't really know how to look at us other than, hey, we're contributing back to their community in a positive way. We can get kids involved in after-school programming that may not exist in their district. So that was a good thing. But the higher up educators, I think they didn't really look at us as an academic program, which is what I think we are. They looked at us as a soccer program. Hey, we run soccer, so it must be a sports program. Now, on the other side, the soccer community does not look at us as a soccer program. They don't know what to make of us because we're not a soccer club. We're not a town soccer association. We're not playing in leagues. So, yeah, you're not really, you're a soccer program, but you're not really part of the soccer community. So I think it took a little while to get incorporated kind of into both worlds. And it's not just locally. I think it was, soccer, or what I call the soccer for good space, was not very well known in the United States and in North America at that point. Much more prevalent over in Europe, South America, Africa, and parts of Asia. Soccer for Good is a very well accepted and known kind of entity within professional clubs, within local communities, and certainly where there's neither in kind of more third world developing countries. So yeah, it was, I think, a little bit difficult. Even today, we still have to explain to people that, you know, we see ourselves as an academic program, and the soccer portion is a way to keep the kids interested and focused. And yeah, by the way, on top of that, for the soccer world people, we have produced some high level players.
Yeah, you know, it's having come from academia myself, I was a teacher for 24 years, and then, you know, in the college scene, still am as a goalkeeper coach at the college setting. So for almost, I don't know, 35, 38, it's all a blur. You know, there is this, I don't know the word disdain, but from the academic side, whether it's a school system or whether it's at the college level, and they look at sports as those folks playing a game. And it's always fascinating to me that they can't make the connection that one serves the other and vice versa. And done correctly, and you are doing it superbly, you are definitely doing correctly, you can use that sport as the carrot, if you will, for improving performance in the academic realm. And then it's a win-win. It's an absolute win-win that you're contributing to the intellectual development, the educational development of young people, in addition to developing pretty good soccer players as well. It's an absolute no-brainer. And I agree with you, Darius. When I hear Project Goal, I think of it as an academic organization, an academic effort that just happens to have soccer as the carrot, as the motivator to get these kids on a good academic track. So I think that's a great point, a really great point. So this is something you and I have talked about a lot too. So there is no charge for the kids, correct?
Correct. Yeah. We don't charge the kids anything to be in the program. They are just a very strict set of guidelines in terms of attendance, you know, being at the program and coming to the program with their, you know, schoolwork. So that has to be done during the program classroom hours. And if they do that, then they are rewarded with the soccer portion and all the benefits and, kind of extras that go along with that in terms of training, coaching, clinics, you know, going to Revolution games or college soccer games, having those players participate at the program. And so they get to participate in those events that go on as well.
And I asked that question for a very loaded reason. Sponsorship dollars are important, safe to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's what makes our program go. I mean, sponsorships, grants, donations, we have a couple of different large fundraising events that are a majority of our revenue per year. And it's free for the kids, but there are real costs involved. And I'd say that, you know, personnel and also the busing, which, you know, goes up every year, are huge expenses for us. And again, those things go up every year. And we have, you know, aspirations to have a place of our own to run our program at one point where we can be more of a, what I call a soccer hub. Where we can do all of our academic activity and soccer activity in one location that we control versus using somebody else's facilities.
You know, so with that said, I will shamelessly, Darius, shamelessly, and I say this in all seriousness, to my listening audience, of which is now thankfully vast, you know, if you have the capacity to contribute sponsorship dollars to Project Goal, if you are in a position to influence entities that do sponsor organizations such as Project Goal, certainly reach out to Darius Shahzadi, because again, I can tell you firsthand, having seen it and experienced it, this is as good as it gets in terms of impacting young people's lives in an academic sense, in a developmental sense, an educational sense, in an athletic sense, in a human sense. So yeah, shamelessly, you know, yeah, if you got, you know, you can write a check with a lot of zeros, even with a couple of zeros, you know, certainly contact my good friend, you know, Darius Shahzadi here. COVID-19, my goodness, it's part of everyday conversation about everything these days. How has the pandemic affected Project Goal and what you typically would be doing, say, this, you know, this time of year?
Yeah, I think it goes much along with what the schools have had to do. Giovanni, it's, you know, when this all started to come down the pike, I'd say late February into March, we as an organization decided to, you know, stop running the in-person program, transition to a virtual environment, first by providing instructional kind of videos and classroom curriculum for our students that we posted online through our social media, coaching sessions, classroom sessions that had a specific topic with our different teachers and coaches. We had to take one of our very large fundraising events online. I think it turned out pretty well. We had an online auction with the items that we would have had in person. Our hosts for the event went online, the Cooligans out of New York City. We had a couple of guests like Jimmy Conrad on, Damien Rivera, one of our alum who's with New England Revolution. And we also had Brett Johnson, who is the new key investor for the new USL franchise that's going to be coming to Pawtucket, Rhode Island within the next couple of years. So, you know, we had tried to do the best that we could. And we continued that throughout the end of the school year into, let's say, late spring. And then we did a couple of summer sessions online as well for a few weeks. And, you know, now we're kind of like on a little bit of a hiatus as regular school gets going. We're trying to find out from the school department exactly if Project Goal can be run in person, depending on what their protocols are. So yeah, it's been a total mess, but you know, we've been working on several other things. One of them is we are trying to build two mini pitches in Central Falls, outdoor pitches, provided by Musco Lighting. So we're working with them and actually one of the former Brown University men's soccer volunteers who is now out in Iowa with a program called Kick It Forward. He approached us and he has dragged along a couple of, one of his teammates from the team who plays professionally, Jeff Larenowitz, who also used to volunteer at Project Goal back in 2006. Jeff played with the Revolution, Atlanta United, I think also with, I don't know if it was DC United as well at one point, but so he's involved. Michael Parkhurst, who also came from Cranston, Rhode Island, who just retired, also played with the Revolution, Columbus Crew, Atlanta United, and then Scott Caldwell from the New England Revolution, and also Julian Gressel, who graduated from Providence College. Who's now at DC United. All of these guys are involved. Scott Caldwell as well with the New England Revolution. All these guys are involved with the MLS Players Association as well. So they're kind of trying to get the Players Association support. They're lending support. We're working with the city of Central Falls as well to get these pitches made. And we're trying to raise the cost of the two pitches with lighting is about $200,000. So we're trying to raise that money so that we can get these fields installed, which are about two blocks from the middle school where we run the program in Central Falls. It will be huge for our program to have our own location to run at least the soccer portion. Huge for the community to have kind of a central location for kids to play soccer. And it'll be huge for the schools that are surrounding it as well, so they could use that possibly during the day and when Project Goal is not using it. So, you know, we have definitely been very busy with Project Goal, even though we've not been able to physically see our students in person.
You know, you mentioned the gentleman from Brown who's involved with the development project over in Pawtucket. His last name is Johnson. What's his first name? Refresh my memory.
Brett.
Brett Johnson, yeah. Have you had any conversations with him regarding their development project, which, as you very well know, is rather substantial? And for my listening audience, if you're not aware, in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, the Pawtucket Red Sox have since moved. They've gone to Worcester, and which has kind of left a significant hole, if you will, in that community. And there is a development effort which will include a stadium and a USL League One franchise, and then, you know, retail and condos, apartments, all that kind of stuff. And any conversation between yourself and Mr. Johnson regarding a connection with that development effort and a facility or something that it could house Project Goal?
Yeah, actually met with them, that group, along with Brett, when they were in Rhode Island. It was probably back in January, February. In fact, I've stolen one of his group to join our board for Project Goal, Peter Baptista. So, yeah, they're very enthusiastic and excited and really want to make it part of the mission to be very involved with the community, not to just come in and say, hey, here we are, you know, Rhode Island soccer community, you know, southeastern Massachusetts. You should come and, you know, buy tickets because, you know, it's pro soccer and you should be involved. No, that they want to be an integral part of the community. You know, like I said, they wanted to have a meeting with us. They want to do stuff with Project Goal. They possibly will be getting involved with our mini pitch effort here that I mentioned in Central Falls. They did talk about, you know, providing access to training facilities once they have those up. They don't know exactly where those will be. They did mention, you know, McCoy Stadium as possibly, being converted into a training facility for the Pawtucket team. But they want to be in the community. They want to be, you know, not something that's inaccessible. This is the same group that runs the USL franchise out in Phoenix called Phoenix Rising, which is very successful. Obviously, a completely different type of community than southeastern New England and in Rhode Island, which has a very vast, you know, soccer history going back many years. So, they certainly want to be involved. They are being involved. Like I said, they were involved with our fundraiser back in the end of March, April. And they want to be more involved. I think they're very busy trying to get their effort off the ground in terms of construction and permitting. And I'm, you know, from what I hear, COVID has not helped the timeline with that. But yeah, they're gung-ho on it. And, you know, Brett is a Brown University alum. So he has connection to the area, to Providence. So, you know, the fact that we're working with Brown and we have worked with Brown over the years and, you know, Project Goal, you know, I'm going to selflessly promote our program, but is kind of a very unique program for what we do. And we've been kind of one of the first in terms of North America to kind of, you know, have a program in that soccer for good space. So they had heard about Project Goal and they're very enthusiastic about working with us.
It just sounds like a natural fit. I mean, by everything that I have read relative to the effort, everything you have just described, you know, integrating, adopting Project Goal and what you're doing is just, it's just a natural fit. And as you very well know, you know, I know you work primarily out of Central Falls, but, you know, Pawtucket Youth Soccer is a very vibrant youth soccer organization. Well, I've done a number of coaching education courses for Pawtucket Youth Soccer, for United Soccer Coaching. It's a vibrant, vibrant soccer community down there. So, well, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, my own two kids played in Pawtucket Youth Soccer for many years. So, it's a great organization. It's great that they actually have their own soccer facilities in the middle of the city. So, you know, it's a soccer specific facility as well. So it's only youth soccer and high school soccer that uses those fields. So It's a vibrant community, and we have a lot of Pawtucket students that are part of Project Goal as well because of the schools that they go to. So, we're very excited to be involved with that group coming in, and can't wait to, you know, have professional soccer back in Rhode Island, probably, I think I heard 2022.
Well, as things progress, and you and I talk with regularity, but publicly here, as things progress, please let me know. I'd love to have you come back on and provide my audience with an update on how that's moving along. And hopefully it will move along. And it sounds like there's great promise there, but I'd love to have you come back on here and just for a short stint. And hey folks, we could bring in some update relative to this development project that could include Project Goal. That would be great for all of us to hear. So let's shift gears to your latest effort called My Soccer Advocate. What's that all about? Where did that all come from, Darius?
So I, like many, I guess, fathers who have children who have grown up playing soccer, as youth. Being a former soccer player myself, you put your kids into soccer because, you know the game and you hope they like it. And, they stick with it because it's my favorite sport. I think it's the greatest sport in the world. And I'd probably guess that you feel the same way based on our, hundreds of conversations that we've had over the years, very passionate. I had my kids involved with soccer from a very early age. My son, participated in town soccer and then went into competitive soccer, then played with the premier club in the area, Bayside. And, he was in high school and then getting ready to start looking at colleges. And, he wanted to continue playing. Now, him and many of the kids that he was involved with at Project Goal, because I involved both of my kids at Project Goal as well, who are all very high-level players, playing for premier clubs, different ones, not always the same. I recognized that when those kids became the age of, starting the, recruitment process, there wasn't a lot of direction. There's not a lot of guidance. And being from Rhode Island, from what I recognize, regardless of the level of play, a lot of those players were not very seriously looked at. A lot of players who are part of premier clubs have the ability, if they do financially, to be able to go to a college showcase tournament down in Disney or down to, Maryland for Memorial Day weekend, where you get a lot of coaches roaming around and recruiting kids. I didn't always see that many coaches going to a Rhode Island-based premier club game. Some did, some don't. I had two kids who went through Project Goal, one who ended up being 2 years in a row the Gatorade High School Player of the Year. He is not going to play soccer in college. What the reasons are for that, the only thing I can gather is there was not a lot of guidance, coming out of a high school, whether that starts with a college guidance counselor, but also even from, let's say, a club level. Although they do have great, seminars where they have college coaches come in and talk about the recruiting process, there's not really anybody kind of helping or guiding their hand in that process, which, even as somebody who comes from a soccer background and played soccer in college, is not always very clear on how is it that I can best get my child to have his skills recognized. So that's kind of where it came from. My Soccer Advocate is to be kind of a support, kind of that guide, and be exactly that, a soccer advocate for these kids who are serious about wanting to continue to play soccer at a high level after high school. So that's either you're going to turn pro, which, if the professionals are looking at you, you don't need any help from someone like me. But if you want to go play, let's say, in prep school, want to take an extra year in a PG year, or you want to go directly on to college, who is describing that process to you? So, that's kind of where I'm coming from and kind of looking at the landscape, much like I did with Project Goal, is seeing a gap that exists for some of these kids. But obviously, this is an older age group of kids because we deal mainly with middle school age kids at Project Goal. How can I help them in that way? So, you know, that's what my soccer advocate is, to provide kind of counseling services, you know, additional training, create a profile. You know, we can create video, we can do video analysis, you know, and use some of my connections, whether it's through coaches that I know. By the way, I need a goalie coach to evaluate goalies. So, you know, you'll be my first phone call for that. But yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from.
I got a save or two left in me, Darius. I've got a save or two left in me, you know? I'm a legend in the over 50 league, a legend.
Well, I know that you've seen your share of goalkeepers. So I know that you can certainly evaluate kids and tell them, you know, what they need to work on. And I think that's part of what the service is. You know, I even recognize that the coaches at the Premier Club level, they're not really having the time to put a kid through the college recruiting process. They'll make a phone call, absolutely, to a college coach if the player requests it or if they already have an existing relationship. But for the most part, I believe from what I saw, at least for the kids around here, these kids are on their own. So, and again, I'm just trying to provide something that, you know, may not be out there right now and may help some of these kids to achieve their goals.
You know, a lot of what you just talked about really resonates with me because, as you know, when I was a college coach, I would certainly dive into the ethnic community because, you know, as everybody knows, some of our best talent is found in the ethnic communities. And we, in the earliest part of our conversation, I talked about my first time going down to Central Falls and seeing all those wonderful, you know, kids from a variety of ethnic backgrounds, you know, playing the game with such marvelous creativity. So, I know exactly what you're talking about, the level of talent that is out there in the state of Rhode Island that, and you're right, a lot of coaches won't go there. They will go to Disney. They'll go to, you know, in Columbia, Maryland for a big tournament, or they'll go to surf, or they'll go, you know, any number of places for that. And when indeed, particularly if you're in New England, you know, it's right there in your proverbial backyard. Have you, and I think I already know the answer to this, have you gotten the use of, say, like guidance counselors or financial aid experts from, say, a college university, an academic person so as to create a committee or staff people who help these kids get through the process? Do you have folks like that?
Well, right now, initially, what I'm doing is I've approached the area private schools and some of the people involved with their college counseling. So the way that I look at the My Soccer Advocate is to kind of be a support for that, but kind of more focused on the soccer side, right? So, you know, most of these kids, whether it's public or private, are in a high school that have a college guidance counselor. Now, how much those college guidance counselors can focus per kid, I guess it depends on how many college guidance counselors they have and how many students they're handling. But, you know, I'd like to work along with those college guidance counselors who are working with them in terms of their academics and also, you know, financial aid applications, what's a right fit, and kind of plug into that along with the soccer portion if the student and their family are serious about that. So, eventually I'd like to have an actual, you know, maybe college admissions or somebody who has experience with that. You know, but certainly I've gone through that with some of our Project Goal kids in terms of that process. And like I said, just completed that process with my son who's attending Worcester Polytech. And I will have a second one going through that in a couple of years. So, it's meant to be as a support and in addition to what they're already receiving at the school. So, but I want to help, you know, certainly from the soccer side.
You know, again, as a college coach, as I noted, you know, recruiting, you know, kids from the ethnic community, in many instances, the kids I recruit were sometimes the first kids going to college, you know, which typifies an ethnic family. I'm a living proof of it. You know, my family coming from Italy, I was the first one to go off to college. So oftentimes, maybe all the time, the process is no pun intended here, is foreign to these folks. And without some type of guidance, you know, they don't know the process. And as you noted earlier, their son or daughter may not even bother going to college because they just don't know the process. They don't know how it works. And having been stuck in limbo can diffuse enthusiasm, can diffuse, you know, any kind of motivation to want to go to that next step, that being college, maybe playing college soccer. So it sounds like something like this fills that need rather well. Is that safe to say, Darius?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, again, you know, just like I said, having a son that just graduated from high school and went on to college and was playing high-level high school and club soccer, I'm amazed, and you may have some experience with this because, like I said, I know you've taught in the school systems. I'm amazed at these kids who have been participating at a high level of soccer from youth all the way through high school, and then when it comes to playing soccer in college, for whatever the reason is, they don't. It's certainly not because they don't have the grades or they don't have the talent or they have, you know, both of those things or just the talent part, but they just don't go on to take that next step. It's, I think, a combination of things. I think it's maybe a lack of guidance. I think in maybe some cases there is burnout from so much soccer at such a young age and the need for competitiveness and the winning, you know, kind of culture and mentality where it's just not fun anymore. But then from, you know, again, I would say ethnic community, but also, again, look, I'm a guy who I'm from the soccer community. I've played soccer in college. I was a little bit confused for my own son. Like, what's the best way for him to get some, you know, some looks and some recognition. And that's for my own son. God forbid, you know, like you said, families who have no idea about the college process, whether it has to do with soccer or not. So, yeah, I think there's a gap. Certainly, I think there's a gap for Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts-based players that I don't know how many coaches are going to see their games. I've been at I've been at the high school finals, semifinals here in Rhode Island. I look around and I don't see a lot of college coaches showing up. And having talked to, you know, some of the coaches from, you know, locally, Brown University, Providence College, you know, they tell me, you know, yeah, they'll recruit locally because a lot of those coaches are involved with the Premier Club, so they know who the players are. But outside of that, you know, there's probably not a lot of coaches coming to look at kids from this area. And I understand the reasons why. It may be the impression that the level is not high enough. I think that's a misguided conception of the level of talent in this area. Or as you and I have talked about too, how many coaches have a budget to be able to go recruit? How far can they travel? If they don't believe that high school soccer is at a high level in Rhode Island, are they even going to do that? So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a huge amount of gap for these kids. And I think there's a real opportunity, certainly for colleges who are eager to, you know, find some different areas to get players from, because there's a lot of talent around here. And I think that will just grow. Certainly, as professional soccer comes into the area locally as well. But I mean, even from the players that I mentioned who are, you know, from the Rhode Island area, who are getting involved with our program, there's a lot of talent. I mean, they're playing at the pro level. They've played at the Division I, you know, level in soccer, and you know, Division II, Division III. It doesn't matter. I think there's an opportunity for those kids, and I think I can help. And that's what I've always tried to do, whether it's through, you know, Project Goal or, you know, now trying to get involved with this My Soccer Advocate kind of project.
You know, in all my years as a head collegiate coach, which surpassed 25 years, I don't know, 25, 7, 8, 9, it's all a blur, Darius, but a lot of years, a lot of years as a head coach, you know, I can remember a lot of parents, now granted, I never kept track, this is unscientific, but enough of these instances took place that I can say with certainty, a lot of parents took a very hands-off approach to when their kids were thinking about college or playing, you know, soccer in college. And they were, you know, they were pretty upfront. Nope, you know, this is all him. You know, he's going to make the decision. He wants to play soccer. He wants to do this and call. We're going to leave it all up to him. And I would have to gently push back and say, you're asking expecting a 17-year-old child, let's just cut right to the chase here, to take on a life-changing decision here. Because going off to college is indeed a life-changing deal here, you know. It's a big deal. It's an important decision over the course of the 4 years of this young person's life. I encountered a lot of parents who just, and not because they were bad parents. I don't want to suggest that these folks were bad parents or apathetic. They just felt, nope, this is up to him. We're going to leave it all up to him. These poor kids oftentimes were left to navigate, you know, some pretty choppy waters. And I saw some kids I was recruiting doing some crazy things. And the one thing that really comes to mind is, you know, what other schools are you looking at? And they would rattle off a list of, like, you know, no lie, Darius, 10, 12, 13 colleges. And I go, whoa. You're all over the place. You've got a Division I, you've got a Division II, you've got Division III, you're in the city, you're in the country, you're all over the place. And I would go, why are you looking at this school? And oftentimes they really couldn't come up with an answer because they're 17, you know, or they come up, I got a friend of mine who goes there. Well, your friend goes there, but doesn't mean it's a good fit for you, you know? And I was always concerned about those kids, that they were, you know, being left on their own by their parents. And again, I want to make sure I emphasize this. You know, most of these folks, not all, were good folks. They just felt that, okay, this is his future. This is his deal. This is his decision. You know, it's all yours, pal. It's all yours. And that's all the more reason why, you know, we need someone like yourself to kind of fill in that situation. And as, you know, to your question about, you know, how do I do this? This is no lie. Walking my dogs last week down the road here, I had a soccer shirt on, of which I'm in all the time. And somebody stopped me. Hey, do you know something about soccer? And I kind of had a laugh. I'm like, well, yeah, I know a little bit. And to make a long story short, they had some young children who are pretty good soccer players. And they talk about maybe going to college. And they ask, how do we go about making sure somebody sees them? And I had a chuckle right. Again. I'm like, there's the million-dollar question.
Right.
And that's no lie. This was last week walking the dogs down my street, you know? So.
And I would, you know, and it's almost the same what I was describing. I mean, you have experience, you know, being a head coach at a college, and you see all different types who are applying to the school or inquiring about the school. And you're right. A lot of them just don't have any clue, which is amazing to me because of the money a lot of these families spend on having their kids involved with high level soccer, even at an early age, and all the travel. But yet when it comes to that age where, you know, they're in high school and getting ready to start looking at colleges, that there's really no kind of guide or plan on how to do that. And, you know, I don't necessarily think it's the responsibility of a club or a town, even sometimes of a high school coach to, and I don't think that's necessarily their goal either, to get their players onto the next level. You would think they would want to do that just out of, you know, wanting to see their players, but in a lot of cases, especially even in high school, the coaches who are coaching at the high school level, a lot of them are not soccer people. They're teachers. So they don't know how to or who to contact, or they don't have a connection at, you know, LaSalle College or Brown with the soccer coach. So again, it's left up to the student or the families to kind of maneuver that process. And again, it's I look at it for the money being spent at the youth soccer level at getting to yourself to the point where, yeah, maybe I can play soccer in college. It's kind of a void. Like, how do you go about doing it? Again, unless you're willing to do all the traveling and spending that additional money to go to those types of college showcases. And then even then, how many of those coaches are going to go see a player from Rhode Island or from Fall River or from New Bedford? you know, Dartmouth, you know, any of these areas. I a lot of times I don't see it. And this is the feedback that I've gotten, not only from kids that my own son played with in high school, but then also the different communities and kids that we've worked with at Project Goal who end up going, you know, to different high schools all over the place. And they're very good players.
You know, not to beat this dead horse, but as we're talking about this, there's so many instances and stories and situations are flooding the forefront of my brain. I remember vividly on too many occasions, you know, you'd recruit this kid and you did all the right things, and you know, they would, you know, get them through the application process, the financial aid process. You'd have them visit the campus, you'd have them do an overnight, you'd have them sit in a class, and you know, you take them off campus and, you know, take them around the city of Boston, because, you know, most of the places I coached at were in that metro Boston, and you know, and then they would go someplace else, which is part of it. I mean, I get that part. And you know, and you'd always ask the question, gee, why did you choose to go to XYZ? Darius, I can't begin to tell you the number of times I got, I don't know. And I would go, whoa. Stop right there. You don't know? Well, I kind of liked it. I go, really? And even after checking all the boxes of all the positives that they could experience at the college I was coaching at, they would still go off to that other school. The second thing that always killed me was following a boyfriend or a girlfriend, mostly boys following girls, the boyfriend following the girlfriend, you know, the high school sweetheart. Well, his girlfriend is going to XYZ college. He's going there. And I used to tell these guys, I'm like, you know, it's a whole new world at college. You know, it's a whole new world. Your high school sweetheart might not be your high school sweetheart when you go off to college. And conversely, you may find somebody else that you like to hang out with than rather than your high school sweetheart. But the one that was real kick in the pants was, I don't know. That always bugged me. And to our conversation to this point, if they had a my soccer advocate, maybe they wouldn't say, I don't know, because they would have been guided appropriately through the process. And, you know, they have some insurance that they were making the truly, truly the right decision that would truly impact in a positive manner their academic, social, and athletic lives. Sorry for ranting on like that, but man, those stories were flooding to my brain, Darius.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I can't also count on one hand how many instances, like you said, the boyfriend girlfriend scenario has turned up. I mean, even when I went to school at Clark University and I was playing on the team, one of the guys, he was a goalkeeper that was from Florida, from the Miami area, and he followed his girlfriend who was going to Tufts, and they broke up, and then so he left Clark. I think after the first year, went back to Miami. You know, so it had nothing to do with the school. It had nothing to do with the program. It only had to do with how close he could be to his girlfriend. And, you know, she was having a great time at Tufts, and they just, you know, as things do, you know, teenagers, you know, they break up.
Yeah.
And the reason why they went to the school, like you said, there was really no rhyme or reason behind it. And that's a big decision. And then all of a sudden you have to now change everything because you made a decision that wasn't based on your academics or your career, or even soccer for that matter. I mean, again, I think that's the, you know, going back to what you said about parents leaving it up to their 17 or 18 year old child to make that decision. There's a lot of things to consider. And I think, you know, the reason why you go and the school being a right fit, both academically and also, you know, if you want to continue to play soccer, you know, you want that to be part of the decision making. Is that what you really want to do? And, you know, is that what's going to make you happy? Because the other part of it is too, as you know, kids make decisions based on, let's say, sports only. You know, even a kid who gets recruited doesn't necessarily mean that he makes the team. So are you going to be okay if you don't make the team for 4 years? I mean, that's another thing that I don't think these kids think about, because most of the kids that I know and get involved with, if they're recruited to go play a sport at a college, to them that means they're on the team. They don't really need to do anything in addition to that. They've been recruited. That means they have a spot on the team. And I have had too many conversations with, you know, kids who've come from our program and over the years that I've coached to say, no, that doesn't mean that you're on the team. You've got to fight for your spot just like anybody else. That just means that somebody saw you and they'd like you to be participating with the team, you know, come the preseason, but you still got to make the team. And again, just something that these kids are not aware of and don't understand. So where I see this service maybe can lend a little bit of guidance and kind of, you know, somebody to give them some advice, you know, before making such a big decision.
Amen, brother. Amen. So Darius, if folks wanted to learn more about Project Goal, or they wanted to learn more about My Soccer Advocate, and contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of Darius, and what's the best way to learn more about your two wonderful programs?
They can visit both our websites, projectgoal.org, GOAL.org, and for Project Goal's website, and then mysocceradvocate, all one word, .com. Both of those have an email address that you can contact me through. And I'd be very happy to talk to anybody about, you know, what we do at Project Goal. Certainly, like you said, anybody who's willing to become a sponsor or donate to what we're doing with the kids here. And then also for somebody who's looking into playing soccer at the next level after high school, I'd love to do, you know, an initial free consultation just to at least find out what their goals are and then see if we could try to help that student.
That's fantastic, and I certainly encourage people to do that very thing, to check out Project Goal, check out My Soccer Advocate, and certainly reach out to Darius. He's done wonderful work, not because he's a good friend of mine, but because I wouldn't say it if it weren't true. He's done some absolutely wonderful work in the community, and has now put Project Goal, and now I'm sure My Soccer Advocate, you know, on the map of things that are such wonderful, are a wonderful project. So fantastic. So our guest today has been Darius Shirzadi, Project Goal and My Soccer Advocate. We're going to cut away for a little bit for a commercial break, a little ad break. And on the other side, we'll re-engage. We'll chat some more. I'm Giovanni Pacini. This is indeed your GP Soccer Podcast. Don't go anywhere, okay? Hey, referee, what's the call? What? Listen to the GP Soccer Podcast? That's the call? Okay, ref, good call. I'll definitely listen to the GP Soccer Podcast.
Hello, my name is Tom Flanders. I'm the girls' head soccer coach at Tilghman High School in Warwick, Rhode Island, and you're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with host Giovanni Pacini.
Welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Giovanni Pacini. I hope you enjoyed that conversation I had with Darius Shirzadi of Project Goal. I hope it maybe inspired you to reach out to Darius and to learn more about his efforts with Project Goal and now with My Soccer Advocate. And last but certainly not least, and I touched upon this in the conversation I had with Darius and in the earlier conversation I had when he was on my show in season two, you know, donation dollars are everything. Donation dollars are everything. And if there's, you know, any organization or any effort that's worth supporting with your dollars, it's Project Goal in the efforts of what Darius Shirzadi is doing down in the Rhode Island area. So if you think that's worthy, contact him and certainly support Project Goal and My Soccer Advocate. So thanks, Darius, for being on the show. Look forward to us getting together and chatting even more about what's going on in the soccer world. So in that conversation, you heard Darius and I touch upon some of my frustrations when I was a head coach at the college level, which was many, 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 many years. So I want to kind of, you know, in a nutshell, offer some advice to parents or coaches or even athletes, for that matter, who may be listening to the show, to kind of give you a better sense of some of the things you might want to be looking at or considering when you're at that stage of your young life or your children's young life about selecting a college, because it is indeed a significant decision in a child's life. And I use the word child not in a disparaging fashion, because for all intent and purposes, a 16 or 17 year old, is still a child, and here they are at a point in their young life where they've got to make a very significant decision. That's a life-changing decision. So the type of support necessary is, it's crucial, whether you're, parent helping out or a coach helping out, whatever. And in this day and age, there are all types of, apps and mechanisms via the internet that help make those types of decisions. But you know what? It still boils down to some very, very basic things. And when I was recruiting and I would be talking to parents, talking to kids, I broke it down into three areas: the academic realm, the social realm, and then the athletic realm. And realize I put athletics at the end. First and foremost, you're going to college for an academic experience and to focus in and get some expertise, if you will, in an area of study. The social part is not, how many parties can I go through from Thursday to Sunday or Wednesday to Sunday, whatever. No, that's not what I'm talking about in the social aspect. I'm talking about the vibrancy of a college campus that includes, clubs and activities where you can get together with kids with common interests, social things that will broaden your horizons outside of the academic realm. And then last but not least is the athletic part. If you're going to college to say play soccer, you want to learn about the coach. You want to learn about the program. Do you want to play Division I, Division II, Division III, junior college? Sometimes that's chosen for you, dependent upon your ability. But that's always last, and it's cliche. But I say to parents, I say to kids, let's say you go to school and all of a sudden you can't play soccer for whatever reason. Say it's an injury, heaven forbid. But let's just say, will you still be happy at that institution because of the academic challenges, the academic rigor? Will you still be happy at that school because of what it affords you from a social aspect? If the answer is yes, you've probably landed at the right place. Some of the things you need to consider: do you want to go to school in a city, where there's a hustle and bustle? Do you want to go to school where it's a little more rural, more distant? How far away from home do you want to go? Do you want to really take off, or is distant a relative term? Yeah, I want to go maybe a couple of towns over. Experiencing a part of another part of the country, if you decide to leave, your home area, let's say. I know folks that have got kids that they've gone off to the other side of the country, which is great, because they get to experience, that part of the country or another state, and kids that maybe come from that part of the country. Certainly the size of the school is certainly a consideration. Maybe you can survive. Maybe you're okay on a college campus that's got, 10, 15, 20, 30,000 students, or maybe you're better suited being on a campus that's got 1,000 or 2,000, something of a smaller variety. These things need to be taken into consideration. And then from there, you can start charting the path toward visiting, those schools that kind of check those boxes, if you will, and ask questions. And then when I say ask questions, not just you, mom and dad, there are questions mom and dad will need to ask in financial aid. But a lot of the questions should be driven by the student athlete. Ask pointed questions to, students on campus, who maybe someone who's running the tour. Certainly ask pointed questions to the athletes that are on the soccer team that you could potentially be on one day. Ask pointed questions to the coach. Are you going to be around within 4 years, in my four-year experience, or is this going to be a stepping stone? Or are you looking to go someplace else? What's your style of coaching? All these are pertinent questions, and you have to ask, and you have to listen very closely. And last but not least, and this is very unscientific, but I'll stake my reputation on this: you'll know in your gut if you have found the right place. You'll know in your gut, because whether you know it psychologically or not, right? If all those boxes I just talked about are checked and your own boxes are checked, you won't need to kind of go through all those consciously. You'll feel it. Yeah, I feel good about this, but I could feel very much at home at this college or university. You know, it's a process, but an important process nonetheless. So hopefully that, again, very much in a nutshell, provides you some things to think about if you're a parent of children who are soon to be off to college and maybe wanting to play college soccer, or you're a coach and you're maybe even a high school coach and you've got kids who are seniors and they come up to you, hey, coach, I want to play soccer in college. Can you help me out? You know, or if you're a student athlete, you're listening to the show. These are some things that you need to think about while making that important decision on which college you should attend. Because as I said, it's a life-changing decision. It's a life-changing decision. You go from being a kid coming out of high school at 17 years old, and you come out a young adult, 22 years old-ish, coming out of a college university, getting ready to enter the quote-unquote real world. Okay? Hopefully that helps. So, if you like what you heard today, tell everyone. If you didn't, tell everyone anyway. If you'd like to advertise on the GP Soccer Podcast, you can contact me, Giovanni Pacini, at GP4Soccer. That's the number 4 at yahoo.com or at 617-968-1800. This is Giovanni Pacini of the GP Soccer Podcast, and I'll catch you later.